This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. We start this hour with something we don't want to talk about again, another school shooting, and this one at the high school, Marjory Stoneham Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. 17 people are dead, and among them a football coach who also worked as a security guard at the school, and according to reports, he was shielding students from gunfire when he was killed. The shooter is 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz, who appeared in court today. He is being described by former classmates as a troubled teen who talked about killing animals and that he posed with guns on social media. And I should say he has been identified as the shooter, an alleged shooter at this point. Robert Runcie, the superintendent of the Broward County Public Schools in Florida, earlier today addressed the families who were affected by this tragedy.
We are doing everything that we can to make sure that we are supporting our students. We're also providing grief counselors on site for students and staff at West Glades Middle School, which is near here. Throughout the district, we're providing guidance to all of our schools on how to have conversations with our students on this particular topic.
On this afternoon, it's really hard not to think about what other schools will be doing and talking about and how they would handle this kind of situation. So we found Superintendent Andre Ravenel, head of Fitchburg Public Schools, who joins us today by phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jill.
Superintendent, I know you're at a national education conference where there are a lot of educators today, and I'm so glad that you were able to take some time out. Can you tell us what school leaders from across the country are talking about today? I can't imagine you're not on this topic.
Definitely the topic is on everybody's mind. And I have to tell you, as I listened to the superintendent in Florida, it was very emotional because as I listened to him speak about the reaction and the steps that they're taking to try to be there for the students and families there, as a superintendent, you say there for the grace of God. And really that's been, you know, the conversation here. Our conference has been overshadowed by this. As you talk to other superintendents across the country, you just kind of try to make sense of it all and try to understand and figure out, okay, how do we address this? It's so massive, you know, the whole issue, and has so many complexities to it. Is it how do we as superintendents address it not only on a local level in our schools and in our school districts, but then how can we work, you know, to move forward a conversation nationwide that begins to address something that is so clearly aberrant, you know, in our culture.
Right. And Superintendent Ravenel, though, you must also first look in your own backyard, I imagine, meaning you know that you go back to Fitchburg this week after the conference, and there you have potentially what any educator faces. So what do you break down first? How do you look at this, like what you have in place first? What do you need to do next?
Well, I've been in contact with everybody back in the district today just to get a sense of the pulse of what's happening in the districts. And there are lots of things that come to mind as a superintendent. The first thing is the most immediate and in some ways is the low-hanging fruit, and that is that you review your security procedures, you review you know, what you have in place already that, as we know in talking with law enforcement, is not there to prevent something, but is really there to try to slow down any kind of a situation and allow all the first responders, allow everyone to get an assessment of what's going on and be able to respond to minimize the action. Because as, you know, working in this, you find that there are very few things that you can do in the long run that are going to prevent someone who's seeking to create violence to do that violence. So you work we work very closely with our police force. We work with, you know, our fire department and everywhere else. And we look at, okay, in our own facilities, in our own procedures, do we have something in place that does the best that it can do in terms of addressing how we would prepare for someone who's seeking to do harm to our students.
So that's a very transparent thing you've just said. There is very little you can do in a school system to prevent if someone's going to try to commit a violent crime as such in Florida, that you can't stop that ahead of time. That's jarring to hear.
It's very, as we have these conversations, both at a local level and at a national level, that's very difficult for us to accept as superintendents because, you know, we look at our school districts like a parent looks at their child, and you see that your first responsibility is to prepare those who are in your care. So you spend as much time as you can trying to figure out what are the things you can put in place, both on a security level, but, and I think that's going to be part of your discussion later on in your piece, is on a preventative level, on a proactive level. And I really think that goes to the whole issue of school culture, of knowing your students, of creating a school culture where people feel comfortable to talk about challenges that they might have, and that basically everyone is operating out of the mentality of if you see something, say something
right.
to someone.
Let's talk about students for a moment. I want you to hear from Tommy Chang again. I don't know if you heard from him earlier. Of course, the superintendent of the Boston Public Schools, a fellow superintendent who might very well, I don't know where he is today, if he's in Nashville or not, he said that BPS teachers are trained to identify students who may be having difficulties.
You just cannot anticipate these sort of situations, but you do whatever you can to prevent them. In Boston Public Schools, we create safe and welcoming environments in every single school, and we're training all our teachers to know the signs. And if students are displaying signs where they are despair or they're lonely, we will reach out. We will make sure they get the help they need.
So that is BPS Superintendent Tommy Chang. He is in Boston today. I assume that you echo some of what he said, that you look to the signs of students and how they live their lives. But students are just living their lives, and they are teenagers in high schools, and they can look lonely and disenfranchised and be just fine. So how do you manage that balance?
Well, I think that's why I refer to school culture, and that is that you develop a school culture. You have to have a school culture where people feel comfortable and where they feel welcomed, and also where you know the students. I'm very fortunate, you know, unlike Tom, you know, I don't have a district of thousands and thousands. I have 5,200 students, so my expectation is that every teacher gets to know their students very well, and you look for those signs. We also, as in, you know, there are a lot of workshops here on this topic, but the topic of social-emotional learning, and really that, you know, we have to address the social-emotional issues of our students before they're ready to learn. But not only that, we have to address those issues just so that they can be better students and better members of the community. And in Fitchburg, we have students who are homeless. We have students who have suffered trauma. So we have a lot of things in place, like Tom, to reach out to students, to assess where they are every day. You know, we encourage all of our teachers to address every student each day, get a sense. We have advisor, advisee. You have morning meeting in our elementary schools where for 10 minutes, all the kids sit on the carpet. They kind of go over, and it gives the teachers a chance to sense, okay, where is such and such a child on this day? And if they need additional support or if they need someone to talk to, we have those folks available.
So it's really personal contact. I have to tell you that outside the middle school where my kids went, and they're in high school now, there was always somebody who we call the dean of students, and he was always making sure to make eye contact with kids. Sometimes he handed out donuts, but he was going to make a connection with every single kid. And it sounds very much like what you're saying. It's like you need to know your population. You can't just, this is not a factory. As big as high schools can be and school systems can be, it's not a factory.
Well, and you have to learn how to read very subtle signs. You know, it's not always overt. It's not always very clear what's going on with a student. And it might manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And it might manifest itself in an art class where a student feels more comfortable to talk to the teacher and maybe not in an advanced math class. So and that's why, you know, we have deans and we have disciplinarians and all too, but you know, we really feel in Fitchburg that it's the responsibility of every teacher to do that, of every guidance counselor, of every custodian, of every secretary. Sometimes it's the secretary. That secretary might be the first person who interacts with the students when they come in 20 minutes late to school.
Right. And there is
if it's a why are you late for school situation, you're not going to hear a word. But if it's a why don't you sit down, tell me how come you're late for school today, and you might get some information that could later be very important.
Right. Superintendent, it's asking a lot of teachers who have a lot in their on their plates already, managing the classroom as it is, getting the curriculum out, responding to the state requirements, making sure those kids pass those MCAS you know, exams. They have a lot, and there's a lot more data being gathered. So here they are also needing to get to know every single one of their customers, so to speak. How are you going to tell them that when you go back to Fitchburg this week after the conference?
Well, I have to tell you, they're the ones that have been asking me for more opportunity to do that, for more training to do that, for more resources to do that, because I think, you know, a good teacher understands that, you know, that students will learn better if they have a relationship with them. They're going to want to please them. They're going to want to understand what it is that the teacher is looking for. So it's really not an additional thing that would be added to a teacher's work. It really is kind of the foundation of, you know, if you have a good relationship with your students and they know that you care for them personally and you're asking them about it, they're going to want to perform for you. You know, they're going to want to do better. And if they're, and we used to do the youth at risk behavior survey every 2 years where you put out a survey. And one of the questions is there one, two, or three adults in your school that you feel comfortable going to if you have a problem? And Fitchburg always scored in the high 80s for that. And it's something that we took very seriously and that we were very proud of, because it was saying that, and students don't have to answer yes, right? They could answer no and say, I don't have any adults that care about me. But over 85% of our students said that in their school, they had one, two, or three adults that they felt comfortable to go to and share a concern that they might have.
Superintendent, just briefly, does class size matter here? And are you going to need to look at your budget? And does the state need to look at its, the tax base and how it distributes money to schools and say, you know what, maybe there needs to be co-teachers. Maybe there needs to be smaller class sizes. Maybe there needs to be more ways of getting to know kids. If that is going to prevent the next shooting. How do you do that?
I think I would go in the direction of there need to be, if all the adults in your school are involved in the lives of your students, class size won't have that much as big an impact as it might have. But if the only adult who has any interaction with the student is your teacher, and that teacher has 30 or 33 or 34 students, then yes, it's going to be more difficult for them to get to know them, which is why most of the public schools actually have something called advisor-advisee, mm-hmm. where your schools mm-hmm. begin every day, where you break that group down to about 15 students, and all the adults in the school take a small group, so they get to know that small group. So I think it's not known to the taxpayer and the public out there that a lot of the strategies that the public schools have already put into place are really trying to address these kinds mm-hmm. of issues.
Well, Superintendent Andre Ravenel, thank you so much for laying this out for us, for and listeners, and for taking time out of this conference. And we'll follow up with you on all of this.
Great. Glad to do that. Thank you very much. And again, my heart reaches out to all those in this situation who've been affected by this terrible event. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Superintendent Andre Ravenel from the Fitchburg Public Schools joining us from Nashville today at a National Education Conference. Let's go back to the press conference in Florida for just a moment, where we heard earlier from Superintendent Robert Runcie, who identified another need of the school system there.
I've been on the phone with members of the legislature. They're going to work with the leaders there and the governor to substantially increase the amounts that are being put on the table right now for mental health services, so we can have more counselors, more psychologists, more family counselors, caseworkers in our schools. It's absolutely, absolutely needed.
Joining me now to talk about that is Stuart Goldman, Dr. Stuart Goldman. He's a senior associate in psychiatry at Boston Children's Hospital. You happen to be in Florida today, Dr. Goldman, in Lantana, Florida, not too far from where the shooting took place yesterday.
Yeah, actually, well, first of all, let me just say my heart goes out to all those people who were suffering this horrible tragedy. I'm actually a professor at Florida Atlantic University, which is about 15 miles from where the scene of the shooting. And so I have sort of, I wear two hats.
I'm sure you were more than that, may I say. I can tell already. How is the community reacting? Were you were on the, you were at the high school earlier?
I was not at the high school. I've been seeing it through the media, and obviously it's been a terrible tragedy and people are very much in shock. There are about 400 students at Florida Atlantic who are alumni, recent graduates mm-hmm. of this high school. And so it strikes home very strongly.
Did you meet any today who had siblings?
I didn't happen to see any today.
Okay. So making some more sense out of Superintendent Runcie's comments in Florida, do you think in Massachusetts, just looking, in New England and other states, but in Massachusetts, because that's where you hang one of your hats, do more mental health services need to be provided in the public school system?
Well, I think certainly there's more support. I mean, just to sort of follow up on some of the things the superintendent said, most kids, first of all, these are extraordinarily, fortunately, rare events, although it's all too frequent, but still very rare. Most of the young people who are get involved with this have ongoing warning signs that date back usually quite a period of time. If we look at the alleged shooter here, he's had trouble for a long period of time, and then his mother died in the fall. So sometimes you see this long pattern. Most adolescents who are having a bad day, which of course is not uncommon in adolescence, is a very different category than someone like this young person who had a persistent and long-term pattern of having a lot of trouble.
So do you think that educators have that ability? They're not, they're not psychologists or psychiatrists to tell the difference between somebody who's on the edge of destruction versus somebody who's having a bad day?
Look for patterns. So, you know, lots of kids have bad days. But, you know, if you're an educator and you see a young person who's having a bad day Monday through Friday, week in and week out, and sometimes the pattern is going downhill, those are the kids who really need to be flagged and addressed. You know, and again, there are certainly shortages in terms of mental health resources, both within the school and within the community.
Right. And schools can only do what they can do. So a lot of intervention can begin in a family, whether that's a family watching out for its own kids or teaching children, I imagine, to recognize what a troubled kid looks like. So how do you talk to kids about that, about young kids, I mean, high school age kids, about recognizing trouble?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the superintendent mentioned something about if you see something, say something. You know, most schools allow for anonymous reporting so that a student who has a worry about another student could speak to a teacher or a guidance counselor or someone else within the school environment. Again, it's all about the pattern. You know, if you're a parent of an adolescent and they're having a bad day and they stump up the stairs, you know, that's sort of not out of the ordinary. It's really when that adolescent is isolated and continuously, you know, sort of uninvolved, either with the family, with his peers, and with the school. Most of the young people who are involved in these terrible tragedies there's a consistent pattern. They're very isolated. They're angry. They don't have a peer group, and they certainly don't have adults that they can speak with either.
Can you talk a little bit about for those who are far away from this incident, but who's, you know, who are families, who are kids in high school, most everybody has seen the report of what happened, if they haven't even seen worse, which was the video from the classrooms. I mean, it's very hard to watch, and it's everywhere, the shooting itself. What do you recommend for parents to say, for families to say to their kids around the dinner table, which they possibly did last night, but it's ongoing? There's more
sure.
talks to be
so,
had.
So first off, particularly for young kids, it's important to limit the media exposure. You know, with middle schoolers and high schoolers, they're going to have access regardless. I think that having a conversation around the dinner table, starting off with a question, something along the lines of, you know, gee, have you heard something or read something or seen something about this, you know, shooting in Florida, is a way to start. Most adults then, because they're distressed by it, start speaking up before they give their children a chance to respond. So ask the question and then wait. And you may have to wait a while. And certainly if the children are not responding, you can ask, you know, or say a little bit more about, you know, you've been seeing about this and I'm sure they've heard about it. And they undoubtedly have. I think that young kids, you know, let's say school age, are most concerned with safety. Is this going to happen to me? Is this going to happen in my community? And in my experience, and I've been doing this for a long time, it's much more impactful when it's nearby. So the Sandy Hook shooting for people who lived in Massachusetts will probably seem much more real than a Florida shooting, which is, you know, 1,200 or 1,500 miles away. Either way, I think it can be very hard on children. And because of the predominance of media today and the amount of time that young people spend with media, they're going to be bombarded by it. So I think there's a conversation. I think address any kinds of inaccuracies. And then be patient. And it's probably not going to be a one-and-done conversation with many families. So following up on it, you know, next day or later in the evening, I think is always a good idea.
Right. I want to ask you something that may also be for the superintendents out there, but for you too, as you do think about how kids learn and know what to say. Okay, so some of the kids who were classmates of the alleged shooter have said that everybody said, you know, in some level, this is according to AP, that if there was anybody who was going to do something like this, it was him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's seeing something, but it's like, you know, you don't want to point a finger. You don't know. You just think the guy. So what do you say to kids around the dinner table again? I'm not asking you to be in the school, but what can you say about, you know,
well,
that it's okay to report someone?
Yes. And I think it's okay. I think we're a community and we support one another. So that, and support means sometimes, you know, sort of sharing worries about someone as well as sharing the, you know, the positive things. So I think that as a community, the interest of the community outweighs the responsibilities of the individual. And that's why most schools allow for some anonymous reporting.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if a student says something to a parent and the student is upset enough to convey this to a parent, then I think it's on the parent's shoulders to have some conversation with the school. And the school is trained to try to sort through, you know, the different elements of it.
Right.
You know, I do want to say one thing, and again, this is We are different in the United States from, you know, every school system, every country that's comparable to us has a certain rate of alienated young people and mental illness. And without the access to weapons like the AR-15, which is the alleged weapon here, people get beat up. Maybe some person gets, something bad happens. It's obviously not something that's a good thing. But you don't have mass shootings without weapons like the AR-15. And so it, both as a parent, as a grandparent, and as a child psychiatrist, I'm totally distressed that we haven't been able to find some way of getting ourselves together to do something actively to make sure that young people like this, the alleged shooter, don't have access to this kind of weapon. When you look across the world, we're the only country that has this kind of problem.
Dr. Goldman, you can be sure that I want to promise you that there will be conversations about gun control. I think on this first day after the shooting, we made an editorial choice to really focus in on what you do.
Oh, yeah, you know, and I'm a huge fan of WBUR.
Well, no, that aside, but thank you for raising it.
But I think that the issue is it's the 600-pound gorilla in the room that seems to, let's not speak about it. And then, and which makes sense because we're all going through the mourning process. And then days go by and we're back to, square one again, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And again, I know that this is not on any particular set of shoulders. It's on our shoulders as a society.
Dr. Goldman, thank you so much for joining us from Florida today. I appreciate your time and we'll check in with you again.
Very good. Thank you.
Stuart Goldman is Senior Associate in Psychiatry at Boston Children's Hospital, and he joined us from Florida. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston.